Okay, well, welcome everyone to this presentation. Thanks for coming out tonight in the cold and weathering that. So tonight we're going to talk about strategies to protect and maximize your investments and build a plan for retirement. And I'm going to try to answer questions at the end and just go through these slides in sort of order. I'm going to try not to get too far into the weeds, and because it's not too large of a group, we might have a little bit of extra time for questions and answers, so that's always a good thing. So two of the areas that I'll be speaking about tonight include, one, different ways you could protect your investments, including some year start strategies, which is always a good timing part of the year to think about these things, and then also some retirement planning strategies that I've seen and learned along the way. I'm a certified financial planner. I'm also an MBA, so I have that dual credential, and I try to really put everything into comprehensiveness when I sort of make these presentations and hit really important topics so people could take away a lot educationally. So this first graph right here is basically the interest rate curve. Now, we all care a lot about interest rates. It affects us in a lot of different ways. As we all experienced last year, inflation hit a 40-year high, so prices of everything, when you went to the supermarket and went just about everywhere, were up very, very significantly. And I remember I even took my kids out for ice cream, and by the time they scooped themselves the extra toppings and self-serve, the bill came to over $20. So everything was up. And so interest rates have risen as a function of that, because when inflation goes up, interest rates go up. Now, this curve right here is sort of where interest rates were in the past, basically in 2021. Interest rates were extremely low, had near historical lows. And then this curve right here is where interest rates ended in 2023. And so you could see the amount of interest you could earn today versus the amount of interest you were able to earn in the past on your investments, whether they are bonds, CDs, has risen quite substantially. And that's a real important idea and concept. And in addition, these interest rate changes here, they also move the stock market around. Most people have stock investments for their retirement accounts and other accounts. And when interest rates move around, so do stock prices. The two are definitely related. And I won't get too far into the technicalities behind that. And so all these things, you know, valuations fluctuate, and all these things present planning opportunities and ways you might be able to take advantage of the markets and other strategies for the future. So one real important thing, and I'll get back to that, the investment side and those sorts of different opportunities that the interest rate changes have sort of led to. One really important thing I wanted to talk about is the fact that there are different types of advisors out there. So as you go and you seek, whether it's different types of insurances, some people are really interested in long-term care insurance, others are looking for other types of insurance. Obviously, people look for investment advice, life-related insurance, all sorts of different topics. And I think it's really important. And one thing I've observed from working as an advisor for many years is most people aren't aware that there are different types of advisors. Now, fiduciary advisors is one category of advisor, and those advisors often don't earn commissions, and there's often less conflicts of interest that are associated with those types of advisors. They don't have specific products that they have to sell, and I think that that's a really important distinguishment. If you're working, for example, with a broker-dealer at a bank, oftentimes that advisor will earn commissions. Sometimes they have specific products that they have to sell you. And I think it's important that you're aware that there are different types of advisors, and that, you know, that could affect the type of advice that you receive. It could affect the types of products that are recommended to you. Advisors that are commission-based might often want to sell the highest commission product, but that might not be in your best interest. And this is something I've observed, and people have sort of complained to me over the course of time from their experiences. So I think it's really important to understand that. It helps you know what sort of questions you should be asking your advisor. And really, you want to understand, you know, what the cost of the advice is. And those are things that will really have a big impact potentially on your future and on the type of advice that you receive. So one of the things that I think is really important that I've noticed that is a pitfall for retirement planning is when people sort of haven't done a comprehensive plan for themselves. Now, a comprehensive plan, it looks at all the different aspects of their financial life. So if they have annuities, if you have retirement accounts, 401ks or 403bs or Roth IRAs, it could look at everything from different types of insurance. If you have different insurance policies, for example, it could look at taxes. It could look at home ownership. And then also what it does is a financial plan will look at your future and sort of what sort of budget you might be optimal for you, because it's often not that easy to look at your investments and to look at your Social Security and to really understand over the course of your planning horizon how much you should spend and how much you shouldn't spend. You know, you never want to overextend and find out that you're sort of running out of money or that there's sort of you haven't planned correctly. So one of the things that doing a plan does is it looks at different rates of assumption on your investments. Obviously, Social Security is always another source of income for people. But it'll also look at the rate of inflation and other factors, because that could really eat away at your purchasing power, as we saw last year. And, you know, that's something that always happens over the course of time. Other factors that can get factored in include taxes, the need for long-term care. Most people always have questions about that and, you know, have people that they know or in their families that have had need for long-term care. And that could get really expensive in those later years. And so those are all things that have to be factored in, because some of the later years for people end up being some of the most expensive years, depending on whether you need that long-term care or not. In New York City, for example, you know, starting rates for assisted living in Manhattan could be about $14,000 or $13,000 per month. So that's quite a bit of money. And it's also always important to evaluate how your income and expenses might change in retirement. And I feel like this exercise is good in that it gives people an increased sense of confidence in their future, and it helps them avoid mistakes or areas that they might have overlooked that they could correct now as opposed to later. And this is just a quick summary of how you can sort of comprehensively look at your all of your financial life and do a plan. You know, the first stage is discovery. Financial goals are always a really big part of retirement planning and financial planning. You know, everybody has different goals. It could be travel, family-related stuff, philanthropic giving, just a very wide range of things. And all those things have some expenses associated with them, and it's just important to prioritize and understand, you know, what is going to be most achievable and what the budget and goals are going to be. So that doing that step would be just evaluating the different types of alternatives. There's always a long range of options of investments you could choose from, of products you could use from, of strategies you could choose from, and it's important to be really comfortable and understand. And then ultimately, there's an ongoing process. This is a circle, because people's financial plans change over the course of time. Sometimes there's inheritance. Sometimes there's birth of grandchildren. There could be just a very wide range of things. There could be geographic moves. There could be downsizing. And all those things could affect what the budget is and how the plan might change. And then also integrated in everybody's financial plan is basically the investments that they choose to basically create their income for the rest of their lives. And this is just a quick chart It shows on the top, there's money market and certificates of deposit. Those are some of the, you know, considered some of the safest sorts of investments, the most conservative. And then as you go down, you know, in the middle, there's corporate bonds and there's different types of stocks. And then on the most aggressive side, there's different types of private investments. And I have a lot of experience with all these. And, you know, I think it's really important to understand what your risk profile is. You never want to be in investments that are too risky for you. You never want to should feel like you have to lose sleep because the market is down. And it's also important to make sure that you're really not being too conservative with your investments as well. And because sometimes if you're too conservative, your money isn't going to stretch out as long as it can. And I think it's important not to be too conservative or too aggressive, as each of those has disadvantages. And, you know, I could always get into that further on if anybody wants to talk further about that. And so one of the reasons why selecting a mix of those, that range of investments for your portfolio, is it relates to this this chart, which is basically what I call the magic of compounding. Compounding, it's a very, very important concept for retirement planning and lots of other industries as well. But basically, you could see here, the way money compounds, making sure you're investing and staying invested at earlier ages and continuing that process. This chart basically shows if you, you know, continue to invest at 50, made the same investments, but started at 60, and then really started more at 70 in terms of the way you're investing and the way you're, the types of investments you're choosing. It shows how much you have at the end of the day. And the difference here is if you started at 70 versus 50, the compounding process, you could see you're looking at a $250,000 balance at the end of the day versus about a $1.3 million balance. So that's just an example of why the types of investments you're choosing are really important for your future, but also you know, the consistency of how you're investing in and monitoring these things and keeping up with them. So one really big topic when it comes to investing and that compounding process, which is so important, is CDs. I think everybody likes to talk about CDs today. The rates are around 5%. I actually just was interviewed for an article in Fortune on this topic. What do people need to know about CDs? And, you know, are CDs a good deal today, or should people be looking at other things? And the truth of the matter is, it really depends on the circumstances. But if you're looking to at a longer term time horizon, you don't need that money in the next 12 to 24 months. CDs are really, and you're looking at, you know, your a long term future. CDs are really not a very good deal today.
They are not. You said not.
They're not. No. Yeah. They're not a very good investment today versus compared to the other opportunities that you can invest in. Now, one of the reasons CD rates are so high today is because the people, the banks that sell the CDs know that they could earn a higher rate of return in other areas. And so they're not making a bet like, okay, well, we think we can make, you know, they're pretty confident. So the 5% CD, you have to look at it in the context of all of your choices. It's just like if you go into, you know, you go into a car dealer. If you're just looking at one car, that's not necessarily going to give you the whole picture. You need to look at a range of different cars and maybe a range of different models as well, so you really understand the context. And so some of the disadvantages of CDs include reinvestment risk. So CDs, you know, you could buy a 6-month CD or a 1-year CD, but once that CD term ends, you basically have to reinvest that money. And the rate at which you can reinvest that money is likely, in today's environment, going to be at a much lower rate. That's reinvestment risk, and most people don't really think about that. I'm definitely a financial geek, so I do think about these things. And so that reinvestment risk really takes away an opportunity because you can't lock in an attractive interest rate for a longer period of time. like that curve we were looking at the beginning, it showed interest rates are pretty high. And so you could lock in, if you buy bonds, for example, fixed income investments, you could lock in these attractive rates today for a longer period of time. You know, that could be significantly to your advantage. In addition, in a bond, you could also get appreciation. So that's going to increase your rate of return. You're going to get interest, and then you also have a very good chance at getting appreciation as well. And there's lots of different types of bonds. I'm not going to go too far into them. There's government bonds, there's corporate bonds, municipal bonds, which give you a lot of tax benefits. You don't have to pay taxes on those. And so all these different types of bonds give you a lot of different opportunities. And they also happen to be fairly safe in terms of their credit ratings. And so they're not quite as safe as the CD, but they're pretty safe. And if you pursue the right strategies in today's environment, you know, I think they end up being a very superior investment to the CD. Also, a 5% CD, if you invest in it for 1 year, that gets taxed at ordinary income levels. So ordinary income levels, as we all know, those are pretty high. And so, you know, after tax, the CD isn't really as attractive also from that perspective. Now, there are advantages to CDs. You know, if you need the money in the short term, you know, you have something you want to do in 6 months or a year, by all means, I think a CD is an optimal investment today. But if your time horizon is different than that and you just are nervous about the market and waiting things out, I think that is not the best strategy. And so we could always talk about that a little bit more, but I definitely wanted to speak about that because I do notice people are really, really heavily invested in these shorter term checking account deals where you get high interest, CDs, other related short-term interest rates, and those are going to present some risks and I think missed opportunities. So when you're looking at investments, you know, there are fixed income and there which include all types of different bonds, for example, and then there's also stocks. And I think both of those categories of investments are very important. One thing most people don't understand or just haven't really had the experience with analyzing and sort of looking at in a range of different inflation-related scenarios is that stocks actually are a great hedge against inflation. They're actually one of the, over the course of time, if you look at academic studies, stocks have outperformed inflation by the most. You know, CDs outperform inflation by the least. Bonds outperform inflation by a little bit more. Stocks outperform inflation by the most. They also have disadvantages, but I think it's really important when you're thinking about your investments to be in a wide range of investments, and that relates to personal circumstances and goals and needs, and so everybody's situation will be different there. But some of the ways you could assess investments and portfolios include asset allocation and diversification. So asset allocation will mean the way you split your money up between bonds and stocks. And there's lots of different types of stocks out there and lots of different types of bonds out there. And diversification is the way you spread your investments out across maybe different industries, for example, different types of companies. There's growth stocks. You know, everybody knows about the technology stocks, like the big ones that have been in the news all the time over the last decade and have really done super well, like Microsoft and Apple. And then there's a wide range of other types of stocks as well. And those are in the value category. And so it's really important when it comes to diversification to make sure that you're not too heavily in growth stocks, which is the Apples and the Microsofts of this world, though those are great, and that you also have value stocks, because the value stocks end up balancing your portfolio out, reducing your volatility. And in years like 2022, for example, value stocks did really well, whereas growth stocks like Amazon and Apple and Google and Microsoft, those did significantly worse. So that's diversification. Another aspect that you always want to be thinking about is your tax efficiency. Nobody wants to pay extra taxes that they don't have to. That's really, really important. There's lots of investments out there that are very tax efficient. And when I've run different types of scenarios for clients, a lot of times by being in tax efficient investments, you can actually reduce your income tax brackets as well. And so that's a great way to manage risk, you know, reduce the taxes, because that just means you're going to get more money at the end of the day without really taking necessarily more risk. So that's something that I really love trying to do. And when it comes to tax efficiency, also there's different types of accounts you could put your investments in that are more tax efficient than others. And so that's another area to think about. Risk reward profile, that's always important, you know, when you're evaluating different types of mutual funds and ETFs, strategies that often your retirement plans might offer, or brokerage houses might offer. That's really important to understand the risk reward profile of some of these investments and how they compare to the risk reward profile of other investments that you have to choose from. There's no shortage of investments out there today. There's actually more mutual funds and exchange-traded funds than there are stocks, which is kind of crazy when you think about it, because the wide range of choices can be overwhelming, and in my opinion, a lot of the options that are available are not very good, but the mutual fund managers market their products very heavily, they advertise, and that's not necessarily going to be your best way to choose what you should invest in. So understanding what's under the hood, what's under the in the engine of what you're investing in is something you really want to think about hard. And then last thing, just cost effectiveness. That just means you want to understand what the fees are associated with the investments. I think these days people do a really great job when they're buying gifts for somebody or buying something for themselves, whether it's a car or household appliances. They look at various options and what the costs are across retailers and across manufacturers. But when it comes to their investments, I think it's a little bit harder for people to do that individually, depending on their background. But that is really important. It's, you know, it's just as you could save a ton of money when you're making larger purchases for, you know, for consumer products, the same is actually so for investment products. So it's a really important thing. So when it comes to reducing the tax bill, you know, that's a big thing. As you have to create your own paycheck once you have stopped working and don't get that regular paycheck anymore, reducing your taxes is only going to help you. And taxes end up being one of the largest expenses that people face over the course of their lives. Housing is definitely one of them. Travel, taxes, that's right up there. And so anything you could do to reduce your taxes, increase your after-tax returns is a great opportunity. And so here's just a quick list of different types of things that you can do to reduce your tax bills. One involves the different types of accounts you could use, lots of different types of retirement accounts. There's Roth accounts, there's pre-tax accounts, there's taxable accounts, just traditional brokerage accounts. Lots of different accounts, whether you're self-employed or had an employer. And that's important to understand what some of those types of things are. Some of those accounts are going to give you very good tax deferral opportunities. So that means you're not going to have to pay any taxes as you go along. And that could save you quite a bit and make sure you have more at the end of the day, which is always a good thing. Social Security and Medicare, you want to understand those things pretty well, and a lot of times your taxable income will affect your Medicare payments. And so any time you can be mindful of that and reduce your taxable income that's coming in from your required minimum distributions that you have to eventually take, that will be of benefit to you, because then you could potentially lower your Medicare premiums. And that's a good thing, because nobody wants to have to pay more for healthcare than they have to. Roth conversions, I won't get too far into that, but that is an opportunity sometimes for people to pay some taxes today for the chance and the opportunity to have to pay a lot less taxes in the future. And so I think a lot of people sometimes think, I always want to avoid paying taxes, as much taxes as I can today. And that's not necessarily the case. If you have a long planning horizon, sometimes paying some extra taxes today, converting that money, will really be of benefit to you in the long term. And that's case by case. Charitable giving, sometimes people want to do that, and there are strategies you can do for that. You can give away some of the most highly appreciated assets you have. If you've held a stock for a very long time and that's gone up a lot in value, that could be a really good opportunity to avoid having to pay taxes and get a big tax benefit if that's something that is of interest. Tax loss harvesting, sometimes people have been in positions for a long time and those positions just have not done very well. Those companies just have really lagged, and there's quite a few of them out there. You know, sometimes companies that were really good investments have become significant underperformers, and selling those investments, taking losses, can help reduce your taxes, and it could also help put you on a better path for the future. So tax loss harvesting is always a good thing. Then there's also tax efficient investments, ETFs versus mutual funds. ETFs are exchange traded funds. They're similar to mutual funds, only they are much more tax efficient often. And so in terms of, you know, having that lower tax bill every year, you know, exchange traded funds can help you do that. Mutual funds often pass along different capital gains at the end of the year. We get those when we get our brokerage statements. And there's often, you know, significant taxes that build up. So looking at the composition of your mutual funds and trying to minimize some of those capital gains that are occurring. Most people don't even know that they are occurring because they're not buying and selling themselves. It's the mutual fund manager that's passing it on to you. It's something of a hidden cost and expense to you. And so that's really important. And then also on tax-efficient investments, there's also municipal bonds. And municipal bonds could be exempt from taxes on the state and the federal level. And so that's always an opportunity, depending on the circumstances. So when it comes to real estate, you know, we all live in Manhattan. We all live on the Upper West Side. You know, location, location, location. Yeah, people love the Upper West Side. It's considered one of the more desirable places in Manhattan. And similar to when you're looking at real estate and where to live with respect to location, location also really matters for your investments. So where you locate your investments can have a really big impact on your taxes and on your returns. We were talking earlier about CDs and how you pay ordinary income taxes on that interest for CDs. You pay ordinary income taxes on a lot of different types of bonds as well. And so one opportunity that you can do is make sure you're putting a lot of your bonds and your investments that get taxed at ordinary income, higher rates, in your retirement accounts, because retirement accounts don't often incur taxes as you go along each year. And so that just means that you're saving that tax on that income. And so that's a good opportunity. Also, with respect to the different types of accounts, if you are in different types of strategies that do generate capital gains, putting those in tax-efficient accounts like Roth accounts, which are one type of retirement account, or other types of retirement accounts like 401ks or 403bs, that can also be a good opportunity to reduce your tax bill. And so all these things, I think, are important to think about, but it's easy to sort of overlook this as a planning opportunity. But it often doesn't cause any additional charges or risk to you, but it just creates an opportunity for you to have more after taxes. So those sorts of planning opportunities are always great. So just on the topic of where to locate an investment, I'm not going to get too far into this, but this is just the way different types of investment-related income gets taxed. Dividends, for example, from stocks, those get a much lower, if they're qualified dividends, those get a much lower taxation than a CD, for example, which is ordinary income, or a bond, a taxable bond. And so that's something to be mindful of, because if you're using dividends as income, you have to pay less taxes on those dividends versus other income. And you also want to make sure where you're locating those accounts is optimal. So dividends in a taxable account are good. The taxation rate is lower, but because it's a taxable account, you will have to pay taxes. And so you might as well pick the investments that are going to give you a lower tax rate for your taxable accounts. And I won't get too far into the weeds on that. So as far as year start strategies go, there are definitely lots of different things that you could look at to start the year. And this is just a quick summary of them. We've definitely spoken about different types of retirement accounts and contributions you can make if you're still eligible. There's also 529 plans if you're interested in, you have grandchildren, for example, and you want to help fund education. That's a great opportunity. Health savings accounts are a great way to save for the future, for healthcare expenses, if you still qualify for that. Health savings accounts are actually one of my favorite types of accounts. They give you an opportunity to put money in to the account without paying any taxes on it, and then you can invest that money, and then when you pull it out, you also don't have to pay any taxes on the money that you put in or the gains. So I think we all would love to have more accounts like that where we don't have to pay any taxes on the money that we're putting in to the account. As the money grows and we pull it out, we don't have to pay any taxes on either the gains or what we're pulling out. And you do have to be eligible, and I can go further into that offline. And then also, there are certain requirements that you have to use those health savings accounts for, certain types of healthcare related expenses. And then taxable brokerage accounts, that's just the traditional non-retirement account, and making sure that you're not getting hit with additional taxes on those accounts that are unnecessary. So here's the topic of retirement accounts again. I think the main point again is they allow your money to compound over the course of time on a tax-deferred basis. And so you really want to take advantage. Lots of different types of accounts out there. I won't get too far into the weeds on that. This just relates to, this slide just relates to one type of retirement account, which is a Roth account. And the Roth account basically allows you to make after-tax contributions. And so I think it's important to have a blend of different accounts. And so if you don't have Roth accounts, it is something to potentially think about. And then also, to the extent you can take advantage of catch-up contributions, that's always a good thing. If you're a certain age, you can take those catch-ups and put a little bit more away. So also important to consider is, as you're investing, is the order in which you invest in accounts, in your different accounts. Because you have many different options of accounts to invest in, I think it's important to understand that there is generally a more optimal sequence in which you can invest in the accounts. In general, I recommend retirement accounts first, then a Roth IRA account, and then third, if there's money, additional money, individual or joint accounts, taxable accounts. This is just a quick diagram that depicts that. I think this helps you maximize the way you're investing in the types of accounts you're using. This slide, I'm not going to get too far into it. It just relates to backdoor Roth IRAs and Roth IRA conversions. And these are good opportunities for financial planning. And it does depend on the individual's circumstances and situations. And so it does require a little bit of analysis, but I think it's something that can save quite a bit of money down the road. So I definitely recommend doing that. So here's a really interesting topic that they call it the Secure Act 2.0. Many of you must have read about this at some point last year. Lots of different retirement planning changes have occurred in the legislation. And this relates to everything from the timing at which you have to take your required minimum distributions in the future to the amount of catch-up contributions you can put in to your accounts if you're of a certain age. It also relates to, for those that have 529 plans, there now is an opportunity to potentially roll those plans. If the money in those plans for your children's education was unused, or grandchildren's education was unused, there now is an opportunity to actually roll that money into a retirement account, as opposed to having to pay a penalty on the excess, because once you contribute to a 529 plan, it has to be used for qualified education expenses, and then if you over-contribute, when you pull it out, you have to pay a penalty. And now there's an opportunity to roll it into a retirement-related account, which is a great opportunity. I'm actually, as you can see here, my kids are pretty happy because I funded their 529 plans, and I'm actually smiling also because I know if there is extra money or if they happen to get some scholarships, I'm going to be able to roll at least a portion of that without paying penalties. This just talks about the details of the 529 plans. It's not applicable for everyone, so I won't go too far into it. There is a $35,000 limit on the amount you can roll over without penalties to a retirement plan, but it is important to be aware of. Nobody wants to pay penalties if they don't have to. This slide relates to health savings accounts. We spoke about that a little bit earlier on as a year beginning, year start strategy, and it just outlines again the triple tax advantage that you could get from health savings accounts. Health savings accounts, you could leave them in. You don't have to use them every year. They don't expire. And so I like to think of health savings accounts as long-term healthcare accounts that could be used, you know, when you're 80. They could start to be used in your 80s, and you could let the money grow, and there's never a shortage of dental expenses, pharmacy expenses, any other sorts of expenses, and so these accounts come in really handy, and because they help you save money on a very tax-efficient way, you're going to have a lot more money at the end of the day than you would have if you just held the money in your bank account or in a CD, then tried to use it at that point. So at the bottom here, one of the things I really like about a health, to recommend about a health savings account is if you can, and you don't need the money at any given point, you should invest it for the future and let it compound like that chart was showing, let it really grow up into multiples of what you contribute to the account. And that's what's going to give you the most bang for the buck. And that's good because I think we've all experienced that healthcare expenses just continue to grow. They always grow quicker than inflation. And when I model in healthcare expenses, when I'm working with people, I like to give them a sense as to what those expenses are going to be in the future. And I always assume about a 5% per year increase. And so over the course of a decade, you know, when you compound that, you're looking at well over 50% more. And so that's one of the reasons why I think these accounts are good, but also compounding your money, making the right investments, guarding against inflation is important because those expenses, they're going to keep going up regardless of what of anything. And so you have to make sure you're growing as well at a greater rate than them. Taxable brokerage accounts, you know, I really like taxable brokerage accounts. They give you a lot of flexibility. You do have to pay taxes on them each year, and we all see those when we get our statements. And I think it's really important, as I was talking about earlier, you want to pursue tax-efficient strategies in those accounts. Keep the turnover low. Don't do a lot of buys and sells. Don't go into a lot of inefficient investments which are going to heavily tax Some mutual funds tax you a lot more each year, and that's, again, that's a hidden cost, but something you should be mindful of, because there are investments that will give you similar or sometimes even better performance and not tax you. And so anytime you can, you know, you're dealing with an apple to an apple, but one of those apples isn't going to tax you, one of them is, and they're about, everything is about the same. Being in that one that isn't going to tax you over the course of time is really going to add up to quite a bit. So important to think about tax consequences. Underperforming assets, I think a lot of people over the course of time have inherited stocks, have read about something and made investments, have been advised to invest in certain things. And I think it's really important to not become emotionally attached. Nobody likes to take losses and lose money, but sometimes the best strategy is to take that loss, use it to offset taxes in a given year, and then invest that in something that is going to give you good opportunity over the next period of time. I think that's really important. Charitable contribution deductions, we spoke about that. Lots of different types of strategies there. I won't go too far into that. And then one other really important thing, emotional reactions. I think 30 to 40% of returns can be eliminated if people are emotionally reacting on a day-to-day or month-to-month or year-to-year basis. Studies have shown this. I know I've seen quite a few of these studies. I've experienced it. I've seen people over the course of years, and I've seen them in the financial crisis. I've heard stories about different things that people have done. And emotional reactions, while logical, because it is our money and, you know, nobody wants to see a significant decline when they look at their statement or their computer screen, emotional reactions can really be very, very significant detractors to returns. So as you're going along, one of the things that's you want to understand is when you're at the point when you're investing, what the risks are and what the rewards are. As we spoke about earlier, having a plan in place that's looking at all these things could really help you increase your confidence in the future. It can make you feel significant less stress when there are periods of turbulence. I mean, over the last couple of years, really over the last decade or so, you know, we've experienced everything from, you know, the financial crisis to COVID, very significant wars and geopolitics, and a range of other things, including flash crashes, which are like technical sort of declines in the market for no real great reason other than technical circumstances. And those sorts of things really contrive people. And so they also present opportunities, but understanding what you're invested in is really going to help you in those times. And over the course of time, those instances won't actually affect you if you're a long-term investor. They just don't. So rebalancing your investments and ongoing review, I think that's a really important thing, because over the course of time, some of your investments are going to increase a lot in value. Others are going to decline a lot in value. Your stocks might grow a lot, will often grow a lot quicker than your bonds, for example. And it's important to understand that over time, it's important to rebalance these things so that none of your investments become too large a percentage of your overall holdings, because that could present a risk. So while you might have been set up correctly when you made your investments, several years down the road, sometimes even a year or two, things could be substantially imbalanced. And so it's important to have the right mix of different types of stocks, growth stocks and value stocks, for example. If you're fixed income, different types of bonds, different maturity bonds. And I think missing that can ultimately cause problems down the road. So an important aspect is sort of doing some sort of ongoing monitoring and maintenance. Now, I'm not saying that should be monthly. I'm not saying it should be quarterly. This is, you know, I think something that could drive people crazy is spending a little bit too much time looking at the news and hearing what the media is saying, because they're always trying to report the biggest stories and the stories that sort of have the most sensational headlines. And that might not be representative of really what's going on. It might cause a little bit of panic, and that's not a good thing. And then also, when it comes to rebalancing investments, I also want to add, when I said before that over the course of time, things like COVID and the declines we experience from them and the geopolitics won't have an impact longer term on your investments, that is assuming that you have the right diversification and asset allocation. If you don't have that, they can have a big impact. So for example, I've seen clients that had a lot of oil stocks, and oil is a very volatile commodity and very hard to predict. And so if you're concentrated in oil stocks, ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips, for example, that could actually have a very significant impact as different events happen. There could be significant declines in the price of oil, and there could be more permanent damage that's done over the course of time if you're not properly balanced. So I just want to be really clear about that. Long-term investing, I think, is a great opportunity, but it does involve making sure that the right diversification and asset allocation is there. And if you're too concentrated, you know, I gave the example of oil, but there's lots of other, you know, financial institutions. I've seen people, they thought being in all bank investments would be very safe because banks can't fail. Well, we've seen recently several banks did fail. Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and lots of other small banks actually had very significant declines, community-related banks. So you really want to understand sort of those sorts of things as it relates to your portfolio, because that can create problems. Yeah, go ahead.
What's the difference between growth stock and value stock?
No, that's a great question. So growth stocks, for example, tend to be companies that are in industries that have very significant growth prospects. So, you know, artificial intelligence right now, that's a really big thing. If you go onto your iPhone, you could ask Siri a question. Sometimes you go on your computer and all of a sudden the computer starts asking you to automatically generate a question. Companies that are in that arena, for example, Microsoft is in that arena, Google is in that arena, semiconductor companies.
High tech
is one example. Okay. There's other examples of growth stocks also. For example, biotech companies that are trying to solve certain cancers, and those are high growth companies. They trade at high multiples because there's a lot of growth and there's a lot of potential in those industries. Value stocks could be a range of different things. You know, for example, financial institutions tend to be on the value stock oriented side. So those have lower valuations. Now, just because they have lower valuations doesn't make them better or worse, but it does make them different. And, you know, other examples of value stocks, for example, are consumer products companies like Clorox. That's a value stock. They don't grow very quickly. Maybe they grow somewhere around inflation. You know, when you go to buy, you know, the different products, home products, cleaning products, that's a pretty stable business. They're not going to increase their sales by 10%, or 20% or 30% like some of these technology companies. And so that's an example of a feature of a value stock. And, you know, just because they're not growing quick, again, doesn't make them any less or more good than a company that is. But I think you want to have a good blend between those two types of categories. And, you know, tying it into interest rates, growth stocks could be very sensitive to interest rates. We saw that in 2022. Growth stocks took a very big decline. Interest rates went up, growth stocks went down. You know, if you were in Apple, it's a great company, but you lost probably around 35 or so percent, maybe even a little bit more in that year. Now, value stocks, they did well in that interest rate surge. They were able to pass along the cost. The way they get valued in the market is different They have a lower price earnings multiple, and all those things help them do better in that volatile conditions, in those volatile conditions. So a good blend between those two, I think, is really, really important. Yeah, go ahead.
If you put pre-tax money into your child's 529, and at some point they don't no longer need it, can you transfer that money from the 529 to your account, or only to the child's account, tax-free?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really good question. Several aspects to that question. One, you could actually change the beneficiary on the 529 if you have one grandchild, for example, and then another is born and you want to split it, or one of the, you know, or you want to save it for a future family member. Now, with respect to rolling over some of that 529, if it's unused, if you overfunded it, you can roll $35,000 over into a retirement account. Now, the IRS actually, when they came out with their retirement, when they came out with their legislation regarding retirement changes, they weren't very clear about whose retirement account that money can actually go to. So that is going to come out eventually. They're going to clarify that. And it's funny because they come out with all this legislation, but there's always these little areas that need additional clarification because they're not perfect. And so they are going to clarify that. So that's actually a very good question, and something that a lot of people are waiting to see exactly what's going to happen there. Yeah.
Can I ask about health savings accounts?
Yeah.
Can anybody start one of those? I thought it's limited.
Yeah. So you if you're 65, once you hit your 65th birthday, you're not supposed to. You're out of being able to qualify, and but yeah, so it's definitely not anybody. When you're in, once you start to take Medicare, you can't fund those either.
That doesn't seem fair, you know, because in these years we're worried about, you know, our later elderly years and would like to put money aside, but
yeah, no, it is. Something that I think should be changed, because long-term care costs are only going up. Long-term care insurance I get asked about that, is extremely highly priced, and it is a use it or lose it insurance. Use it or lose it means if you don't use it, you lose all of that, those premiums and those payments you put in. And so, you know, when you're dealing with car insurance, that's fine because it's not that significant of amount of money. But when you're dealing with something that is as significant as long-term care insurance, then all of a sudden use it or lose it is not a great thing. And so that's something that needs to be thought about. And I like the health savings accounts because if you can get some money in there, at least, you know, that's an easy and cost-effective way, and not a use it or lose it way. It's always gonna be there to help fund some of those costs. So I agree with you. It is unfortunate, can't be used for everybody. I did want to bring it up to the extent anybody still isn't in the position where they can, as I did think it was important. But you know, everybody's circumstances are different, so not everything is going to be applicable for everybody. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
How do you put together AI and volatility in terms of your recommendations to people?
Yeah, no, that's actually a great question. Are you talking about AI with respect to investing in AI?
Yeah.
So I think it's...
Well, not just AI, but...
All sorts of investments, yeah. Okay. So when it comes to AI investments, for example, there's lots of different companies out there that are trying to benefit from the trend of AI, and it is a very significant trend. And I think it's really important to take lessons from past experiences that people might have read about or even experienced firsthand, like the internet and the .com. A lot of these smaller companies that are trying to focus on AI, they might end up going out of business, like a lot of the internet companies did in the .com period. So you want to be really, really careful. There happens to be a lot of big companies that have great balance sheets, very strong cash flow, that focus on AI and will be beneficiaries of AI. And so I think it's really important to, when you're trying to benefit from this trend, make sure that your attempts to benefit don't turn against you and end up causing losses. So diversifying, looking at some of these larger companies that have a range of products, but also are integrating AI into their offering is a great way to do it. AI was a very significant boost to the portfolios that I have for my clients last year. And that wasn't really, it was because I was diversified, right? I wasn't specifically trying to target AI. I knew AI was important, but there's lots of different companies that are going to benefit from AI. Some of them are in the medical space, for example. Some of them are just going to be companies that are going to be able to use AI technology and reduce their costs using AI. And so there's just a very wide range of companies. It's not just the growth stocks, but there are some value stocks that will benefit because they'll be able to use AI, they'll be able to reduce their expenses using AI because they won't have to have as large of a workforce, for example, and they'll be more efficient, more productive at a better cost, and that's a great thing. So I'll just go through this really quickly. This relates to what we were talking about, what we've been talking about a little bit with respect to value stocks and growth stocks. Here's a common problem I see. I've seen in people, their portfolios are really a little bit too heavy in, or sometimes a little bit more than a little bit, in growth stocks, because those have been very popular and they've done very well. And I think it's really important to have a good balance from an asset allocation standpoint, from a volatility reduction standpoint. So one of the things I like to do is I like to change the asset allocation, put a blend between the value and the growth stocks, analyze that, and then that's going to improve the diversification and the ultimate risk-reward profile. Another situation, large capital gains occurring, and so every year, you know, when you go to your tax preparer, you know, there are a lot more taxes. And so when I see that, I like to try to reduce some of those taxes by using more efficient investments for taxes. And oftentimes you can maintain the same returns. Sometimes you could even improve them depending on circumstance, but lower the taxes. That's a good situation. I've seen other instances, and this can relate to the CD that we were talking about, but it could also relate to other things. People are, in this instance, client was 14 years away from retirement, but they happen to have about $300,000 of cash in their retirement-related accounts, cash-related money market investments. Now, that is, in my opinion, unless there's a really good reason, not a great idea, because you're not going to give yourself the opportunity to grow that money over the course of time. And so, one thing you can do is you could sell some of that cash and invest it in higher quality related stocks and bonds. And if you assume a 7% return, for example, on that money, over the course of 14 years, that basically $300,000 will turn into close to $500,000. So that's much better than just having it in cash if you are a long-term investor and you are interested in compounding your money and there's no other specific reasons why you want to be in cash, for example. So here's the last slide right here. Changes occur in everybody's lives. They can relate to everything from divorce to unfortunate death of loved ones, inheritance. Sometimes your beneficiaries, you might want to change those. Purchases of new homes or sales of homes, moves to other states or other geographies. There's always a tax law and estate-related planning changes that are occurring. And so those are all things, medical situations, those are all things that should be signals to you to maybe think a little bit more if you do need to reduce the risk of some of your investments, if your risk profile is changing. Those are all things that can increase the need for financial planning, because you never want to be in a situation where there are risks that you're not addressing that you can address. There's always risks in the market that we can address. It's always going to be that way. But to the extent you can focus on the things that you can change, that is always a good idea. Lots more information on us can be found on our website. I've been quoted in a range of different publications on retirement planning, on investment planning, including Fox, CBS, Yahoo, Fortune, and Forbes, and the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, which is a podcast which is kind of cool. It focuses on a lot of different retirement-related topics, not just financial, but just other topics like what to do if you're bored and how to think about if you're getting ready to retire, or just all the different topics that people might face emotionally and personally. And I happen to be on the retirement financial planning segment there, so that was kind of cool. So now we have time for some more questions, if there are any. Yes, go ahead.
What are your thoughts, or rather your opinion, regarding cryptocurrency?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, I've avoided cryptocurrencies throughout my career, and for all my clients, you know, and as well as personally. I don't think it fits the risk-reward profile of the clients that I serve. You know, when I see some cryptocurrencies literally, you know, with declines of 50, 60, 70%, or some of them even more in a fairly short period of time in some instances, that's not the store of value that I would seek for compounding and the generation of long-term financial well-being. And so I know there are crypto ETFs that were just approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission. I think you have to be really careful with them. And it does make it a little bit easier to invest in those cryptocurrencies now that there are these ETFs. In the past, one of the risks with cryptocurrencies was the fact that the cryptocurrency could literally be digitally stolen from you.
Yes.
So this risk is removed in most instances now if you do look at some of these ETFs, for example. But there's so many other risks.
You would avoid it.
I would avoid it. And I think it's really, really important to understand that it's very, very speculative. And when you're looking at something like that, you really, really have to understand the downside. It's easy to focus on the upside. The commercials and a lot of the articles that you'll read might often focus on that person that turned $400,000 into millions and millions, and now they were retired. But those tend to be the exceptions, and so you want to avoid, I think, the emotional reactions and the emotional desire to sort of capture those gains, because they could really derail a sound financial plan pretty quickly. Go ahead.
Do you do consultations with people, or how does it work? Is there like an hourly fee, or how does your financial planning work?
Yeah. So I'm a fiduciary financial planner, so I never earn commissions. I'm independent, so I don't have specific products I need to sell. And I can work with clients in three different ways. One way I can work with clients is sometimes work with clients on an hourly basis when there's a narrow scope and they just want to focus on a very specific part of their financial plan or financial questions. Second is I can do standalone financial plans for people, and that could be a one-time thing, or it could be an ongoing financial plan, and that looks at all the different aspects and opportunities and risks that might be in a person's personal financial life. And it sort of gives them recommendations, and it's a one-time plan. It takes about 3 or 4 weeks to do. Then I provide a plan of about 50 pages or so, and budgets and all sorts of analysis, recommendations, investment recommendations, changes, tax-related topics. And so that's a one-time financial plan. And then I could also work with people on an ongoing investment management basis, and that involves doing all the financial planning and doing the financial investment management. That one tends to be the most popular way I work with people, but I do work with people in a range of different ways, and I love being, as an independent I'll say, I love being able to have flexibility with being able to be creative when I talk to clients. I don't have specific products I need to sell people. I'm a fiduciary advisor, so that's the highest standard of care, and I never earn commission, so the conflicts of interest that are so prevalent in financial services today in terms of sales quotas and commissions and third-party compensation, those don't exist with me. The only fee I earn is the fee that's stated up front, and I think that that's really important. And that was one of the reasons I tried to highlight that, because I think that model tends to really lead to good financial advice. Any other comments or questions? Yes, go ahead.
Any thoughts on CBDC, central bank digital currency?
In terms of investing or the way it's going to impact the future?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think central banks have seen the digital currencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum and a range of all these other digital currencies, and they've thought about their own digital currencies, and I think the digital currencies like Bitcoin do raise some concerns on a lot of aspects. So I think it can make transactions less frictionless if these things are adopted. And to me, anything that improves the safety of the financial system and the transparency of the financial system, which I think some of these central bank digital currencies might help do, I think is a good thing. So yeah.
One last question. What's your hourly rate?
Oh, so my hourly rate is $230 per hour.
Okay.
And for people that have specific narrow areas of questions, I definitely think that that's a good option. I also think, if somebody has a specific question and it's only going to take 15 minutes, I'm not going to really charge anything for that, because I really only do it on an hourly basis. So if it's, if it's less, I'm just going to try to give you an answer or direct you to somebody that might. And sometimes people have questions and they actually end up being better served by somebody who might not be a certified financial planner or financial advisor like myself. They might end up sometimes be a better question for an accountant or even a lawyer in some instances, or sometimes some other industry. So if that is the case, I will gladly help point you in the right direction. I think I have a good set of relationships that I like to work with, people that have a good client focus, and so I'm always happy to help in any way I can.
Let me just carry on from that. If you're doing the more standard thing you're saying most people do, which is develop a plan and maintain that investment, help into the future, how many hours does that take you to do? I mean, just to give you an idea, it's like, is it 10 hours, 20 hours, 30 hours, 40 hours? What does it take to be able to put together a plan?
It's a good question.
To maintain it into the future, $20,000, $30,000? What kind of general idea do you have of how much it might cost?
Yeah, so my plans start at $3,500. And for people that do the investment management relationship, it's included in the asset management fee. Mm-hmm. So there's no additional sort of charge. That's sort of included in the ongoing management. And so a plan, it depends on the person's circumstances, as you could imagine. No two people are alike in terms of their goals or their needs or their financial situations. And so on average, the plans definitely take me a good amount of time. I'd say in some instances, I've spent well over 30 hours on those plans, because they're very comprehensive. And so I use financial planning software. I have a great technology. It's very secure. I'm very, very big on security. So people input, certain information. I collect that, everything from age to a range of other inputs, social security related numbers. And then what I do is I project out and I look at what sort of retirement paycheck we can create for the person based on their assets, based on their social security. If they have annuities or rental properties, you have to factor that in. And then I also look at and think about, help them think about, okay, well, what are their expenses today and what do they want their expenses to be in retirement? And that often takes some time because people have to think. But that's important. That's an important part of the process. And then what I'll do is project out and just show what I think the budgets could be. Oftentimes, people have tons of investments. We've spoken about all the different types of investments tonight, ranging from CDs to much more complicated investments. Sometimes it can be crypto, but usually not. But I've seen just about every investment you could ask. And I'll make suggestions as to how I think those things can be changed, both to enhance returns, to reduce risk, to properly balance it, as well as to make sure that the investments actually match the risk profile of the owners. Because I've seen widowers that are in their mid-70s that had extremely aggressive investments that were improperly suited for them. And I've also seen 40-year-old very successful doctors that are invested very heavily in money market related investments. So I've seen people that are too conservative. I've seen people that have been way too aggressive. And so I'll make sure that that doesn't happen. And I'll answer all the questions and use my decades of experience to make sure that the investments that we are using are going to be most tax efficient, are going to be best risk reward, in my opinion, offer the best asset allocation, and ultimately give the best confidence in the future for the person. And I think those are some of the things that will be involved in the plan. I'll always look at people's insurance. I'll talk about long-term care because that is important. And I always factor in long-term care costs to my plans because I think if you're not doing that, you might be doing yourself a really big disservice because I see a lot of people and they have, you know, parents, for example, or grandparents, and those last few years could be some of the most expensive of your life. Right. And nobody's ever thinking about that. You think, well, I'm not going to be traveling anymore and the house is paid off or I'm renting. And then all of a sudden that gets turned upside down. So I factor that in so that there are less surprises that could potentially come up. Now, hopefully everybody in this room won't need long-term care, including, you know, myself, but we just don't know. It's impossible to predict. So I think you have to sort of think about it. You have to analyze what some things you can do are to help fund that in the future. And so that's another topic that ends up being pretty big and pretty important to look at. And there's a host of other topics, you know. And so I try to really be very methodical about going through it and very comprehensive, bring all the pieces together and just reduce the stress of clients so that they just don't have to really think too hard about it. They can focus on the things that they want to do, which generally is not financial planning.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, yeah, okay. I have a few cards here. So.